Have you ever wanted to learn a new language, but just didn't have the time or money? I may have a solution for you. Her name is Jessica, and she gives free Chinese lessons daily at 11 p.m. Beijing time and 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Chinese is fun and easy if you have the right teacher. Let Jessica be that teacher and introduce yourself to the fastest growing language in the international job market today at tinyurl.com/tcjessica and tell her Ian sent you.
Do you like fine art but think it might be out of your price range? Do you have a vision for a painting that you'd like to see brought to life but you just don't have the skill? I might have a solution for you. Art by Daisy. With decades of experience, Daisy offers high-quality, affordable watercolor paintings suitable for hanging in your home, office, or even as a gift. With prices starting at just $55, visit tinyurl.com/artbydaisy to find out more.
It's been fairly quiet and activity outside the Simpson household.
OJ was at home.
Simpson, charged with the two counts of murder, was supposed to surrender to LA police at 2 Eastern this afternoon, but failed to show up. Both here and in Chicago.
A very serious situation here, and I can tell you one that is hard to believe with my own eyes.
Hello and welcome to the Deathcast. I'm your host, author, and journalist, Ian Tott, and I'd like to thank you for joining me as we prepare to take our very first look at the murder of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Lyle Goldman. Anyone who's followed the show for a while knows that I like to do extreme deep dives and investigate any aspect of a case that is worth investigating. By that, I mean if people are really talking about an aspect of a case that may not be necessarily part of the mainstream narrative, I will go into it simply for the sake of being a completist, and that is what you are going to get with this series, which I have entitled Death in LA. Alright, before we get into the first part in this series, I've got the normal show notes. If you'd like to follow me on social media, just search for The Deathcast, Deathcast Pod, or Deathcast Official. If you'd like to help support the show, there's a couple of ways that you can do this. First and foremost, you can go to your favorite podcast app, subscribe, and leave a 5-star review. You can also go to buymeacoffee.com/thedeathcast and make a one-time donation. Or you can go to tinyurl.com/dcastpatreon, where as little as $2 a month, you can become a supporter of this show. What does becoming a supporter of this show do? Well, first and foremost, it helps me to continuously improve the quality of this show. For you, the listeners, it guarantees you access to early access ad-free shows, no matter what tier you're at. And it also gives you access to exclusive series, such as the series I did covering the Columbine crimes, as well as the Vince McMahon series that is currently ongoing. Again, that is for all of the tiers. I know a lot of shows like to gouge you to try and get you to go for a higher tier. I don't pull that nonsense. If you're supporting this show, I want you to know I appreciate it, and that's the best way I can do it. Speaking of supporters, as always, I have to thank my first two supporters, Channel and Anthony. Thank you guys so much for your dedication and support of the show. We also have a new supporter to this show, Jason. I know Jason through social media. He's a real good guy. Got my similar sense of humor to my own. Thank you so much for coming on board and coming into the crypt. All right, now that all of that is out of the way, find yourself a nice comfy chair, kick back, relax. I've got my coffee, I've got my cigarettes. Let's go into the crypt. On July 12, 1994, the bodies of Nicole Brown Simpson, aged 35, and 25-year-old waiter Ronald Lyle Goldman were discovered lying in the walkway to Brown's South Bundy Drive condominium in the Brentwood section of Los Angeles. Eventually, Brown's ex-husband, former football player and NFL Hall of Famer and movie star O.J. Simpson would be arrested and brought up on charges of first-degree murder for both Brown and Goldman, of which he would later be acquitted. So there is your general overview of this case. If you did not live through the O.J. Simpson trial, you have no idea just how big a deal this particular case was. I would argue, and I believe many would support me on this, that the murder of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman was the crime of the century. It's a pretty big statement to make. Some people contend that the murder of JonBenet Ramsey was the crime of the century, while earlier in the 20th century, the kidnapping and eventual discovery of the body of the Lindbergh baby was the original crime of the century. However, in terms of media coverage, any other case you could bring up, past or present, pales in comparison to the discovery of the bodies, the eventual arrest of O.J. Simpson, which was filled with theatrics, and then the trial. Some may disagree with me and try and contend that JonBenet Ramsey was a bigger media firestorm. That's fine, but prove it to me. The O.J. Simpson trial was on every single channel. Major sporting events and television shows were preempted for coverage of the O.J. Simpson trial. Snarling piranhas such as Nancy Grace became a household name because of this trial and have continued to taint the pool of public opinion in high-profile cases ever since. None of the other cases, such as JonBenet Ramsey or Casey Anthony, would even be a blip on the radar had the mainstream media not gotten such a positive result from their coverage of everything having to do with O.J. Simpson. I remember when the bodies were discovered, they broke into our local news coverage on the East Coast to let us know that the body of O.J. Simpson's ex-wife and a friend were discovered at her home, and that police were looking for O.J. Simpson, as initially they had no idea whether or not O.J. Simpson was a target of this thing, because this was an extremely brutal murder. People, oh no, all murders are brutal. No. This one was above and beyond. There was a lot of overkill involved in this crime. This was not your atypical home invasion murder, or murder of chance, or even spurned lover murder. This murder was on par in terms of brutality with the Wonderland slayings that I covered at the end of last year. And as we get into it and really start discussing it, I'm going to warn you that we're going to be covering some pretty graphic material. But we're also going to be covering some of the alternative theories that have come out, some that have made the mainstream media, others that have not, such as the assertions from a Los Angeles-based doctor that more than one person was involved and multiple weapons were involved in this particular crime. But we are getting ahead of ourselves. Let's start at the beginning. Orenthal James Simpson, more commonly known as OJ or OJ Simpson, is a former football running back, played for 11 seasons with the Buffalo Bills. Simpson was born July 9th, 1947 in San Francisco, California. Now, OJ is a big man. During his career, his physical stats were 6'1", 212 pounds. Simpson was the son of Eunice Simpson, who was a hospital administrator, and Jimmy Lee Simpson, who was a well-known drag queen in the San Francisco Bay Area. Jimmy Simpson ends up dying in 1986 after coming out as gay. Simpson dies of AIDS. Now, Simpson had rickets as a child, and because of this, he ended up having to wear braces on his legs until the age of 5. Normally, this would really kill any form of an athletic career, as rickets is a pretty horrific disease. However, Simpson is eventually going to be able to overcome this. Now, in 1952, his parents separate, and Simpson is subsequently raised by his mother. Simpson had a somewhat troubled youth. He's known to have joined a gang as well as been arrested on at least one occasion, at which point he was incarcerated with the San Francisco Youth Guidance Center. A woman who knew Simpson during this period of time named Marguerite, who would eventually go on to be Simpson's first wife, said that during his teenage years, Simpson was a quote-unquote really an awful person then. Simpson credits a meeting with Willie Mays, who was a very prominent African-American center fielder, often listed as one of the greatest baseball players of all time, as the reason why Simpson was able to turn his life around. Simpson started playing football at the then Galileo High School, which is currently known as the Galileo Academy of Science and Technology, in San Francisco, and it was noted that he was a fairly standout player even this early in his career. Simpson ends up graduating in 1965. Simpson was largely ignored by major colleges after graduation because he had mediocre grades. However, Simpson ends up enrolling at the City College of San Francisco and continues on with his football career, playing as a running back and defensive back. This gets him named as the Junior College All-American Team Running Back, which eventually leads Simpson to participate in the Prune Bowl, where they beat Long Beach State College. Now, this is what gets the attention of college recruiters. Simpson eventually decides to attend the University of Southern California. And again, he has a very impressive career while at the University of Southern California, leading the nation in rushing yards in 1967 and 1968. In 1967, Simpson is a runner-up for the Heisman Trophy. That same year, at the age of 19, Simpson marries his childhood sweetheart, Marguerite L. Whitley. Marguerite was born March 20th of 1949 in Los Angeles. they would go on to have three children. OJ's oldest daughter, Arnell, who is going to play a part in the coming trial and investigation. Jason, and then another son by the name of Arland, who would not make it out of infancy. There are stories out there that OJ was physically and emotionally abusive to his first wife, Marguerite. However, she has denied this most publicly during OJ Simpson's murder trial in 1994. Whether there is any basis in reality to that or not, we will really never know. What we do know is that after graduating college, he was drafted by the Buffalo Bills. Simpson demanded what was then the largest ever contract in professional sports, $650,000 spread out over 5 years. Obviously, the Bills balked at this, and Simpson stated that either you give me this money or I'll just go get a career in Hollywood. And eventually, the Bills did cave into this. So the first few years of Simpson's professional football career were really unremarkable. It was more his off-the-field activities that are of interest. Simpson was known to have a very large ego and to have many extramarital affairs, which in turn led to he and Marguerite separating on a number of occasions. She is going to end up filing for divorce from him in the mid-1970s before retracting that and getting back together with OJ, although ultimately the marriage is doomed to failure, specifically due to her husband's rising celebrity, the availability of women to him, and his inability to stay within the confines of his marriage. Now, OJ is eventually going to break out. This is in 1972, when the Buffalo Bills bring in a new head coach who decides to structure the entire team around OJ Simpson. Simpson had remarkable seasons up until 1977, when he gets sidelined by injury. Simpson is a very gregarious and charismatic individual, so much so that around this time, he gets an agent who starts getting OJ spots in commercials and small spots in television shows, which is eventually going to lead to a string of appearances in movies, the most famous of which were the Naked Gun films of the late 80s, early 1990s that starred Leslie Nielsen. In 1978, OJ gets traded to the San Francisco 49ers, who he stays with for 2 years, with his final NFL game taking place on December 16th, 1979. Looking back a little bit, by 1975, OJ really was courting celebrity superstardom, with People magazine describing him as the first black athlete to become a bona fide, lovable media superstar. I'm going to contend that that's really not the case. Muhammad Ali was a much more well-known and beloved African-American sportsman than O.J. Simpson ever was, and he was one well before O.J. rose to prominence. During 1975, he began appearing in a series of endorsements for the Hertz Rental Car Company. And it's important to remember that his relationship with Hertz goes back to 1975, because even Hertz is going to play a small role inside of the O.J. Simpson murder drama. And to give you an idea of how big O.J. is going to end up becoming, by 1992, it's estimated that he had a total of $10 million in assets, which included hotels and restaurants, as well as over $1 million a year in income. As for his personal life, as I stated, O.J. was a known womanizer throughout the 1970s. In 1977, he met a young woman by the name of Nicole Brown, who was working as a waitress at a nightclub called The Daisy. Now, Nicole Brown was born May 19th, 1955, in Frankfurt, West Germany, to Louis Hezekiah Brown Jr. and Judith Ann Brown. Nicole's mother was German, her father was American. She was the second of four daughters, with Denise being the oldest, and then Dominique and Tanya being born after Nicole's birth. There were also two half-sisters from her father's first marriage. Now, eventually, the Brown family returns to the United States and settles in Garden Grove, California, which is in Orange County. And Nicole ends up graduating from Dana Hills High School in 1976. So by the time she meets O.J. the following year, she's still extremely young. She's 18, 19 years old, whereas O.J. is a 30-year-old man. She's young, she's beautiful, she's impressionable. She encounters this larger-than-life celebrity athlete. Obviously, he very quickly charms her and sweeps her off her feet. And it's not difficult to see why O.J. Simpson would have been attracted to Nicole Brown. As I stated, she was a very beautiful young woman. Just as it's not difficult to see why Nicole would be attracted to O.J. He's got money. He's a reasonably good-looking man. He's also very, very charming. You have to wonder what the Browns thought upon learning that their, you know, 18, 19-year-old daughter is going out with a married father of three who is 30 years old and is also a celebrity football player. I imagine that there were some very interesting discussions within the family during this period of time. However, eventually, O.J. does win her family over. So O.J. and Nicole began dating. In August of 1979, O.J.'s youngest child, Aaron, drowns in the family swimming pool. And also in that year, O.J. and Marguerite officially divorced. That was in March of that year. In December of 1979, O.J. officially retires from professional football, with his last game being on December 16th of 1979. And from this point, he moves into a career as a color commentator for professional football, but more and more he begins acting. Most of his acting credits were in supporting roles, as, according to Simpson, he did not want to star in anything that could be considered blaxploitation, which was very popular during the 1970s and was even still somewhat popular during the early 1980s. Even if he had not had an acting career, Simpson's various endorsements, specifically with the Hertz Corporation, was netting him a hefty profit yearly, so much so that he and his soon-to-be wife, Nicole, would have been able to live very comfortably and well above that of the average American. We really don't know when OJ began to physically abuse Nicole. We do know that he was a very controlling individual of the young woman from early on in their relationship. Just as we know that the accounts of abuse that he did perpetrate against Nicole were extremely horrific and brutal, and we're going to be getting into that shortly. In 1985, the couple ends up getting married. This was on February 2nd of 1985. The couple do end up having two children, first of which was Sidney Brooke Simpson, followed by Justin Ryan Simpson. Regarding the relationship between Brown and Simpson, one friend stated that they were mutually obsessed with one another, although toxic to one another, in that Brown was obsessed with Simpson, Simpson was obsessed with Brown, and that Brown could incense Simpson like no one else possibly could, and that's not giving him an excuse for the things that he did. We know that Nicole Brown called the police numerous times on OJ because of the abuse that she was suffering. And I want to make clear, any form of abuse against a woman is wrong, and I state that because the next statement may come off as though I'm condoning what he did. OJ didn't just simply, quote-unquote, slap his wife. He was full-on punching this young woman. You can find, and in fact, if you go on the Patreon page, you will see images of the injuries that Nicole Brown Simpson suffered at the hands of her husband, where her face is all puffed up and black and blue. She has a black eye. There's black marks on her arms. That type of thing. There is a sick, twisted portion of the male population in this world that believe it's a husband's right to, quote-unquote, correct their women, as they see these women as their property. And even of these twisted, useless, mouth-breathing pieces of shit, many of them agree that the type of thing that O.J. Simpson was perpetrating against his wife went well beyond what these Nimrod dipshit motherfuckers consider discipline, and was full-on assault. Later on, be it this episode or the next episode, I will be playing some footage of 911 calls that Nicole made in 1993, in which you can hear O.J. Simpson in the background, but you can also hear the terror in Nicole's voice. And even before they were officially married, the couple had a very contentious relationship, with OJ throwing all of her stuff out of the house, or Nicole herself out of the house. This is the $5 million mansion in Brentwood that Simpson was living in at the time of Nicole's murder. Give you a better idea of their relationship. On the one hand, we have this, you know, horrifically abusive individual manhandling his wife like an absolute piece of shit. The other hand, he's giving every member of her family jobs. There are stories out there that he may have paid for one of Nicole's sisters to go to college, at the University of Southern California that he placed his father-in-law, Nicole's father, in charge of the Hertz branch that OJ owned. So it's very difficult to get a grasp of what was really going on in this marriage. However, to me, it seems as though, and this is my opinion, while OJ did love Nicole at one point, and they, you know, was obsessed with her, as many people she said she was with him, at the same time, he went out of his way to manipulate her in every facet possible by taking care of her family members and by putting them in positions where he could control their lives and their income, whether it was her father or cousins of hers. It seems to me that that is what was going on within the Simpson marriage, as far as the things that he was doing. To the outsider who hasn't looked into these types of things, it may seem that he was simply being generous and taking care of his wife's family, but to those who have looked into this type of thing, it's fairly obvious that he's setting up all the chess pieces around her as a means to keep control of his wife, because if she doesn't do what I say, you know, it's very easy to turn around, well, I guess your cousin doesn't need a job anymore, does she? That type of thing is not unheard of in these types of situations, and I do want to emphasize again that this is my opinion based upon looking at the evidence that we have before us. I can't prove that that is the case, but that is what I believe to be going on here during this period of time. And there are many examples that illustrate this for us. As already mentioned, you know, we've got the cousins working for OJ. At the same hand, he's smashing his wife's windshield out on the car with a baseball bat, which OJ admitted to under testimony, calling it not a big incident. Throwing her out of the house, calling her a whore and a cokehead. That's something that we do have to look at in all of this. There are some who contend that Nicole Brown Simpson never did drugs. And while I could not get on the stand and say conclusively that that is absolute bullshit, the two of them were a young, good-looking celebrity couple in the 1980s Hollywood. Cocaine was the drug of choice during this period of time, and to say that neither of them ever partook of this drug, I think is a misnomer of the highest order. I am not stating that as Nicole's friend, admitted drug addict Faye Resnick, stated in her gossipy quote-unquote tell-all book that came out after Nicole's death, that Nicole was a man-hungry coke fiend. But it does need to be stated that there is a better than average chance that the two Simpsons partook of the drug, especially given their lifestyle, their access to this narcotic, and that more likely than not, it did fuel instances of domestic disturbance and even domestic abuse within the house. And the reason I say this is because, at least according to OJ's first wife, Marguerite, there was never any form of physical or emotional abuse between the two of them outside of OJ cheating on his wife a lot. However, when we get Nicole in the picture and they start dating and then they move in together, OJ is no longer in football. He is more and more into the acting field, going to Hollywood parties, that type of thing. As the decade progresses, there are extreme random acts of violence reported that match nothing that we know about Simpson prior to his relationship with Nicole, and I can't believe that it was simply that he was that madly in love slash obsessed with her that drove him to these things. I think it more likely than not that many of these instances were in fact fueled by the intake of illicit substances. So any look at the two of them that doesn't involve the usage of cocaine, I think, is an untrue look at their lives. Having said that, I'm not saying that she deserved any of the things that were done to her. Far from it. Just because you're pissed off at your wife over something and you're high on coke doesn't give you the right to choke, punch, or strangle her, throw her out of the house, throw all of her belongings out of the house. But at least to me, it is an indication that there were other forces at play within this relationship other than the fact that he was just a jealous husband. Now, the most well-documented account of abuse against Nicole Brown Simpson actually took place on New Year's Day of 1989 when Nicole contacted the police, stating that OJ was in a rage, he was going to kill her, he was hitting her. So police arrive at the Brentwood home, at which point Nicole comes running out of the house and hides in the bushes, screaming, quote unquote, "He's going to kill me." When questioned by police, Nicole informed them that she was very frustrated and terrified, as this is the 9th known time that the police had been called to the Simpson home. Now, eventually, OJ gets arrested for this, and Nicole's father, it is said, comes in and convinces his daughter to drop the charges. This is because, supposedly, OJ had offered her father a position basically overseeing the Hertz chain that OJ owned. Some commentators see this as another manipulative maneuver on OJ's part. However, I was unable to find any records indicating when OJ put Nicole's father in charge of this particular location. But it is known that her father did indeed run this location, and many people have said it was more of a situation where OJ just gave him this location almost as a gift, with it all being in OJ's name. In any event, Nicole ends up dropping charges against OJ. However, he does, in fact, plead no contest to these charges. And it's a misdemeanor. OJ ends up doing a bunch of community service. And later commentators have stated that OJ was able to get this community service based on his status within the society that he was living, namely the Los Angeles area. He's a very famous ex-football player, he's an actor, etc., etc. Unfortunately, that type of thing is not unheard of within the realm of celebrities. Honestly, I mean, a really good example of this type of thing basically being swept under the rug and ignored is the recent conviction of Danny Masterson on numerous counts of rape. Reason I say that's a good parallel is because just like O.J. Simpson, Masterson had numerous accusers come forward to, at least by their accounts, the Church of Scientology during the period of time that the attacks were taking place, and nothing was done about it. Another good parallel is Harvey Weinstein. We do know that many people attempted to come forward in the past regarding his actions and were basically pushed aside. The same goes with Bill Cosby. These individuals, they have this level of celebrity and a false sense of power, and because of this, unfortunately, oftentimes law enforcement are blinded by that celebrity and by the idea that this is a very powerful and important person and are unable to effectively do their jobs. I have to imagine that were this situation to have taken place today in this 24-hour news cycle that we live in with organizations like TMZ in existence, O.J. Simpson's career would have been effectively over. And regardless of what it was that he was able to do in the legal court, the court of public opinions would effectively have ruined his career or any chance at a career that he might have had. As the decade of the 1980s ends and the 1990s begins, the marriage between O.J. Simpson and Nicole Brown Simpson continues to be volatile, with accusations of infidelity on the part of O.J. peppering their relationship. O.J. later did claim to have become involved in a relationship with Tani Katan, who, if you'll recall, was in the Whitesnake video. She ends up later marrying the lead singer for that band. If we believe that he was in fact in a relationship with her, this gives credence to the idea that there was some pretty heavy drug usage going on in the Brown-Simpson relationship, as Tani Katan was open about her struggles with the drug. And the fact that he is associating with people such as her, which brings with it many people from the music world who, during this time, obviously cocaine is just as big, if not bigger, within the music industry as it was within Hollywood. We can really start to see that there's some dysfunction going on in this relationship between O.J. and Nicole, and that a good portion of it very well could be due to both parties partaking of various substances, whether that's because they feel it's their right and a privilege, or if it's because one or both parties have, in fact, become addicted to this drug. Unfortunately, we'll never know. I imagine, however, that at least with Nicole, it may have become a coping mechanism for her due to the fact that her husband would be a loving, caring individual one moment and a screaming psychopath the next. That is not uncommon in this type of situation where one, the person who's being victimized turns to a substance in order to help them cope. Sometimes it's something as supposedly innocuous as food. Other times, you know, they end up becoming an alcoholic or a cocaine addict or some other type of narcotic. Things that they lean on as a crutch to help them get through life, as they can see no other option forward for them to be able to get out of this situation. The mind becomes trapped, as does the body, in the idea that this is my life, there is no way out of it. The only way that I can survive this is if I use this substance to help me get through it. And it's an unfortunate situation that Nicole found herself in during this period of time. Because again, there are more scenes of explosive violence, despite what Simpson has stated, that he did not strike her before or after the incident that took place on January 1st of 1989. Others who were close to Nicole have stated that that simply was not true, that OJ just became much more low-key about it, as opposed to how he was on that night, where he left horrific bruises on Nicole's face, her arms, things of that nature. He would take to punching her in the ribs, that kind of thing. Assaults that could not be readily identified as having been done at his hands. He also became much more controlling, verbally abusive, but at the same time colder towards his wife, as he began to look outside of the marriage for his own needs to be met. And it's an ugly situation for everyone involved. The wife never knows who it is that's going to be coming home. The husband, while still infatuated with the wife, is no longer seeing her in the same light that he once did, and it's very possible that he is seeing that she may be starting to slip away and out of his grasp. So now he's crueler towards her, and also looking much more aggressively at other avenues to get his whatever it is that he needs from a relationship. We do know that the relationship had deteriorated to the point that in February of 1992, Nicole Brown had completely left the marriage, and in fact, on the 25th of that month, had filed for divorce from O.J. Simpson, citing irreconcilable differences. She had already moved out of the home on the money that he was giving her at this point, taking the children with her. And it's this period of time from this filing of the divorce up until the actual discovery of the bodies that really grabbed the attention of the police when Nicole and Ron Goldman are found dead. Because, according to both OJ and people that knew the couple, despite the fact that they had separated, they're going through a divorce, they are continuing to see one another, and it's understandable that they would try to reconcile over this period of time after they've become separated and eventually do get divorced. But at least according to those who knew the inside scoop on their relationship, OJ continues to exert a rather disturbing amount of control over Nicole and her life. Now, according to OJ, even after their divorce, Nicole would still come to him for advice, although he eventually distances himself from her. By OJ's own account, given during the depositions for the civil trials, because she had so many issues. According again to Simpson, he observed his wife having oral sex with one of her boyfriends, and he found it absolutely disgusting that she would do this out in the open in her own home in plain view of anybody who happened to walk by or even in view of their children. He also claims that Nicole began hanging out with a pretty disreputable crowd during this period of time, including a prostitute by the name of Alexandria, as well as Heidi Fleiss, who, if you'll recall, is the Hollywood madam who was famously arrested and jailed for running a prostitution ring that serviced A-list high-powered individuals within the entertainment industry. I want to make it clear that we have no evidence that this actually took place, that Nicole was involved with these individuals, except for OJ's accounting of it and the accounting of other people such as Faye Resnick, who I call questionable. It's my opinion that while it's very, very likely that Nicole was using drugs, I believe Faye Resnick more likely than not juiced up these stories for her book in order to sell more copies, because sex sells, as does violence, especially when it concerns anyone associated with the entertainment industry. That is only my opinion on this particular subject. However, what we do know is that despite what he has put out there, many people saw OJ as very obsessed with Nicole, being seen in her yard on numerous occasions, showing up to the house unannounced, letting himself into the house, having confrontations with her. At one point, he is known to have kicked down her front door to confront her over the fact that a prostitute allegedly told him that she was heavily involved with drugs, that this boyfriend Simpson had seen her having oral sex with was heavily involved with drugs, and that she was friends with Heidi Fleiss. I'm going to play one of many 911 calls that occurred during this period in time after their divorce, while they're going back and forth between reconciling.
911 emergency.
Can you get someone over here now to 325 Gretna Green? He's back. Please.
Okay, what does he look like?
He's O.J. Simpson. I think you know his record. Could you just send somebody over here?
Okay, what is he doing there?
He just drove up again.
He just drove up. Okay, wait a minute. What kind of car is he in?
He's in a white Bronco. But first of all, he broke the back door down to get in.
Okay, wait a minute. What's your name?
Nicole Simpson.
Okay, is he the sportscaster or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Wait a minute. We're in the police. What is he doing? Is he threatening you?
I'm going nuts.
Okay, has he threatened you in any way, or is he just harassing you?
You're going to hear him in a minute. He's about to come in again.
Okay, just stay on the line.
I don't want to stay on the line. He's going to beat the shit out of me.
Wait a minute. Wait, just stay on the line so we can know what's going on until the police get there, okay? Okay, Nicole?
Uh-huh.
Just a moment. Does he have any weapons?
I don't know.
Okay.
He went home, now he's back. My kids are upstairs sleeping, and I don't want anything to happen.
Okay. Has he hit you today or no?
No.
Okay, you don't need any paramedics or anything?
Uh-uh.
Okay, you just want him to leave.
My door. He broke the whole back door in.
And then he left and he came back?
He came and he practically knocked my upstairs door down, but he pounded it, and then he screamed and hollered, and I tried to get him out of the bedroom because the kids were sleeping in there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then he wanted somebody's phone number, and I gave him my phone book, and was gonna, or I gave, put my phone book down to write, mm-hmm. just write down the phone number that he wanted, and mm-hmm. then he took my phone book with all my stuff in it.
What? What does he say?
Could not tell in the background, OJ is screaming about his wife being involved with prostitutes, quote unquote, sucking dick in the living room, doing drugs. There's a film out there that's name escapes me where it's claimed that OJ is yelling at her because Nicole is actually working as a prostitute. I can't speak for the veracity of that claim, but it is clear if you listen to that section that he is in fact yelling at his wife over doing drugs, having sex in open view of where anyone can see it, as well as being associated with individuals who are prostitutes, and that he's basically saying he's taking control now because she is incapable of managing herself or her life, and that she is endangering both herself and their children by being associated with these individuals and doing the things that she is doing. This is my opinion. If any of this is true, if Nicole was engaging in any of these activities, if Nicole was using drugs in the manner that is claimed, my opinion is that falls solely on the shoulders of her ex-husband because of the way that he treated her, because of the levels of control and abuse that were present in the marriage. He has stated that she was a very unsure woman who is constantly dieting and working out and going under the knife. That's a clear sign of somebody who has been through some pretty horrific things. They're attempting to make themselves look quote-unquote perfect on the outside, because on the inside, they don't feel that way, and in fact, they feel completely shattered and broken. That's a direct result of whatever it was that actually took place within this marriage. Some of that is opinion, but a lot of that is not opinion. You can go and look online, specifically on the hotline.org, which is a website dedicated to helping women who are in abusive relationships, and they pretty much spell out what was going on in this relationship, which is exactly everything that I said. Obviously, all of this is going to lead us up to the night of June 12th, 1994, which we're going to get into next week. I hope that you have enjoyed this first part in the Death in LA series. Again, if you like the show, please consider leaving a 5-star review wherever it is you find your favorite podcasts. Consider making a donation at buymeacoffee.com/thedeathcast. Or the best way you can help support this show, go to tinyurl.com/dcastpatreon, where for as little as $2 a month, you can help support this show, get access to early ad-free episodes, as well as exclusive content. Until next time, the Deathcast is a production of Corpse Creek Publishing in association with Big Pond Podcasts. Stay morbid.